I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. TCS is brought to you by MTN Business. Visit www.mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more. Michael Maas is my guest on TCS. Michael is CEO of ZimmyCharge, an EV charging and software specialist based in Stellenbosch. And they were recently in the news for deploying an EV charging station solution for a logistics company in Johannesburg called Bakers SA. Michael, good to see you. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be here, Duncan. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Tell me a bit about ZimmyCharge, based in Stellenbosch. How long have you guys been around for?
Yeah, so I started Zimmy about 4 years ago. I really just saw this opportunity where the whole country and the whole world is basically shifting to electric vehicles, but people were just really struggling to charge and to access energy and to see infrastructure in a way that it can work in their business and in their lives. So started Zimmy literally out of my garage.
Okay. What was your background? What did you study? How did you come to this particular space?
Yeah, so I studied engineering. So I'm a mechatronics engineer. I also studied at Stellenbosch. So I worked for a number of years in product management and product development. So working with, you know, large companies and small companies building products and really finding that interface between hardware and software. So IoT, which is just a really nice sweet spot for mechatronics. And I'd always been very passionate about renewables and about energy. So when I kind of went out to start my business, I just found electric vehicles fascinating, and just seeing the amount of problems there were just amounted to an amazing opportunity to start a business in the space.
I haven't heard this term mechatronics before.
Oh, really?
Robotics
is the other one, yeah.
You're skilled in both mechanical and electronic engineering.
Yeah, so it's a blend. Yeah, exactly. So it's a blend actually between mechanical and electrical or electronic engineering. Mm-hmm. So it actually combines both. And I think they started the direction almost in the 90s, at like MIT is where it kind of got going, and in Japan. And then it's come over to South Africa. So yeah, it's the program and the course has been going for a while. And yeah, I think electromechanical is what they call it at UCT. So yeah, it's quite a popular one now.
So when you set out to start ZimmyCharge, what were you thinking? What was your plan for the company back then? And how's it changed over the 4 years?
Definitely. So yeah, quite naively, I started in public charging infrastructure. I just thought that if I can go and raise a lot of money, we can put down charging stations everywhere, and you know, the customers will come. Everybody will buy EVs, and they'll just start charging, and we'll make lots of money. Unfortunately, we found that in South Africa, the market is quite nascent. So you know, there's only about 3,000 to 4,000 EVs on the roads, and there'd already been some established players in the market as well. So as a startup starting from zero was just a very hard hurdle to cross. From all of the conversations we had in the time while we were figuring out what the business would be, we just found a really good sweet spot with private charging. So basically for fleets and logistics companies, because there's just a very big incentive for them to make the shift. So large logistics firms are having or facing carbon pressures from their clients, right? Mm-hmm. So people need to reduce carbon quite drastically and quite quickly, and fleets are high carbon emitters. So the idea of shifting to electric for them then becomes an imperative to make sure that their customers can actually reduce their carbon. And then there's also this opportunity to save cost, right? Everybody runs a business. It's about the bottom line. And EVs, again, also just present this opportunity to do both, right? Can we save the environment but also make some profit? And we just found that to be a very good sweet spot. And from there, you know, we just kind of took off.
I think when everyone thinks EV charging stations, they think, you know, at on forecourts on the highways and public infrastructure. But I don't think people realize just how big the private charging infrastructure market has the potential to become, given that it's actually logistics companies, you know, your delivery companies. I know Woolworths is using electric vans now. They're the ones who are actually going to drive the early adoption in South Africa, aren't they?
100%. I think, again, just because the incentives are there for them to make the switch, we're seeing also a lot of the vehicle options becoming available that really work well for them. Just in comparison, I think looking at something like the US market, I think about 85% of charging there happens privately. So only 15% happens on public stations.
A lot of people don't realize that. They think, well, I'm going to buy an EV now. Where are the charging stations in my area so I can keep the vehicle topped up? People don't seem to think that, actually, I'm going to charge this at home 99% of the time.
Exactly. It's very rarely that you would, as a private consumer, actually need to use a public charger. You use it again when you, for example, have a longer trip that day, or let's say you do go, you know, on holiday or something like that. For fleets as well, I mean, they just find it much more cost effective. I think it's still very useful to have public charging. I mean, that's really important also just to make people feel comfortable with range. I think there's, you know, a really big gap in the fast charging space. So again, you know, you don't necessarily always have, you know, 150 kilowatts available at home. So it is really useful to have those available, but I think the opportunity very much lies in the private space.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So tell me how the business has developed over the last 4 years and what your primary focus is now and how you service your clients.
Definitely. So yeah, at Zimi, we do a number of things, right? So first off, we're going to start with infrastructure. So we actually work with clients in actually performing site energy profiles, understanding how much energy they have available at their locations. And that's usually quite an important part of the puzzle, right? Because if you don't have enough power coming from your distribution board or from your location, then it's going to be a struggle, right? So we do the analysis and the evaluation of that. We then also help them plot and plan for potential solar rollouts. So for example, we integrate with solar systems as well in the case where they don't have enough grid power available. And then we deploy the charging infrastructure. So that's, you know, rolling out, testing, and then making sure that they're trained and upskilled and how it works. The second part of the business is very much focused on software and analytics. So our software system is fully integrated to the charging stations, to the power sources. So we, you know, get all of the data from the energy, the cost. We help them highlight fuel savings. We help them see actual carbon reduction from the initiatives.
Because they need to report on that.
They need to report on it, exactly. And we present them just a really very good user interface where they can actually see these reports and these statistics which they need for their clients. Then we also tie into their telematics system. So also integrating with, you know, three or four of the largest telematic systems in South Africa to track everything from distance, energy consumption, etc. So the way that you have to think about an electric fleet versus a fuel fleet is that you now have to consider things like kilowatt hours, you have to consider things like time to charge and how that really affects your operations. Mm. And that's where Zimi steps in and just really helps to service the clients.
To what extent do you find companies deploy solar and then realize, well, we've got all the solar capacity on our roof now, maybe we should look at what else we can do with it and then give you guys a call because they want to do EVs?
Yeah, it's actually almost about 50-50 at this stage. So about 50% of the clients have deployed solar, depending on what type of operation they have. So typically with logistics companies, they're not necessarily very high power users. Mm. If you're, for example, a waste recycling company, you have lots of machinery, yes, then the solar is probably utilized.
But as a logistics company, you have a lot of, usually have a lot of space.
You have a lot of real estate. Yeah, exactly. So no, we do get a lot of opportunity where a company has gone, they've invested in solar. They typically overinvest, which also makes sense. Mm. They cover the roof, right? They go for the bigger system, but then they realize that they have, you know, excess energy which they're not using. You can't necessarily quite easily resell energy in South Africa just yet. So they think, okay, how are we going to manage this resource better? Mm-hmm. Then EVs becomes quite a logical next step.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So tell me a bit about the project you did with Baker's SA. What have you done there so far and what are their expansion plans?
Yeah, so we've been working with Baker's now for the past year. We really started by first just understanding what their fleet does and how it operates, right? And that's always a really good first step. Just focusing on the data at hand, what vehicles they're using, what type of use cases they have, and where is the opportunity for them to actually apply electric vehicles. Baker's also has a very good relationship with Daimler Trucks and Mercedes-Benz in South Africa. So they've been using Mercedes and Daimler Trucks, you know, for the past, I don't know, 20, 30 years. And Daimler has just launched a number of electric vehicles and electric trucks in South Africa. So, you know, the stars just aligned and we just saw this wonderful relationship developing where we were able to, you know, look at their sites, understand their energy profiles, get the trucks on the road and then deploy infrastructure and then help them quantify that. So we're looking at expanding perhaps to about another 20 or 30 stations in South Africa in the next year and servicing.
Just for Baker's.
Just for Baker's. Mm-hmm. And, you know, potentially looking at, you know, decarbonizing anything from about 30 to 60% of their fleet in the next 3 to 5 years.
Okay. Now we're talking trucks here. We're not talking little light delivery vans.
No, they're big trucks. Yeah. No, they're 8-tonners, 4-tonners, and then panel vans, which is a bit of the smaller stuff. But yeah, trucks. Yeah, big trucks.
How do the logistics differ in terms of charging infrastructure for big EV trucks compared to cars?
Well, yeah, the first thing is just size, right? So typically the battery packs are massive.
Massive.
I mean,
what are we talking about here?
The eActros is now the two versions have anything from a 300 kilowatt hour battery pack and the bigger one a 400 kilowatt hour battery
pack. That's about 5-6 times the typical electric car.
From 100%, yeah. So the Volvos and the BMWs are all between about 50 and 100 kilowatt hours, correct. So it's just a lot more energy that they require. Also, if you're running an operation, you have to be very sensitive towards SLAs and delivery times. So you have to make sure that you can get a lot of power. You have to make sure that your power is scheduled correctly. And then also uptime and availability. I mean, it's important that you don't have any downtime with operating the vehicles. So that's the first big challenge. I must say that on the driver side and the driver behavior, behavior side, there hasn't been much of a difference. Mm-hmm. Drivers at the start, I mean, even myself, when I drove an EV for the first time, I had range anxiety. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, it's I know natural. How this works, but you just naturally feel, you know, concerned about, you know, what's going to happen when I run out of range. So in the first week or so, there's typically some concerns about that. But then after that, even the driving experience in the trucks is much better because it's quiet, right? Mm-hmm. So it's still the quiet motors. It's typically automatic drivetrains. So the drivers also just report, you know, a lot better experience in operating the vehicles.
Interesting, interesting. So how are they managing the range issue? I mean, these trucks obviously need to be on the road for a lot of the day. Do they last the full day before they get back to the depot for charging, or do they have to charge during the day as well?
Yeah, so that's an important part of the equation. So looking at what we do is at the beginning, we have rated ranges for vehicles. So what the manufacturer specs it out. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is you have lots of conditions that affect range. So you have things like driving behavior, temperature, load, right? If depending on how heavily you've loaded the vehicle or not, inclines, declines, regenerative braking. What we found works the best is actually just to measure what the vehicle performs, like how it performs on range, and then planning for that. So, I mean, we've been seeing vehicle ranges, relatively above 300 kilometers for the vehicles. Mm-hmm. And in that case, then you know the constraint, right? Then you know, okay, I'm planning for 300 to 350 kilometers. In terms of my route planning, I can then adjust that to make sure that I have enough energy. Or in lots of cases, we then work with them to understand where can we potentially put another charging station or charging infrastructure, mm-hmm. so that they can increase distances, right? So vehicles are very much in the logistics space about increasing daily distances. So yeah, then we work with the teams to help them understand that and to achieve higher kilometers.
I imagine in the logistics business, though, that these trucks are not traveling intercity for the most part. I mean,
they do.
Goods that need to come from Cape Town or Joburg, I guess, or lighter goods, I suppose, not heavier goods, would go by air. If I order something from Takealot, for example, it usually comes on an aeroplane to Joburg and then is distributed here.
Yeah, you'd be surprised, actually. I think in South Africa recently, specifically in the transport space, we've had a large failure of in railways. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that has shifted to the roads. Okay. So road transport has seen an immense amount of growth in the past 5 to 10 years, and we just see that growing. So what happens is, in certain use cases, for example, if you're thinking of high volume goods, high weighted goods, typically road transport still is the most cost efficient. In terms of Baker's plans, I mean, we're looking at doing things like electrifying on the N3, so the route between Durban and Johannesburg. They're already doing work on the N1 up to Polokwane from Pretoria.
Baker's is. So this would be private EV infrastructure on the national roads.
Exactly, yeah. And specifically focused on trucks and for these clients. So typically, if you have an opportunity to share infrastructure, there might be some ways in which we can assist, especially in helping to save costs if the schedule allows for it. But it's all private infrastructure, yes.
Interesting. Well, is the idea that infrastructure would then be made available to the public, or would it stay private?
It would stay private. Yeah, again, because if you look at public infrastructure, it's a different type of business model. Mm-hmm. It's also different in terms of thinking about utilization. So with trucks and with logistics, you have a very a good idea or forecast of what utilization is going to be because you have relatively fixed schedules and routes and things that can be mapped out. Mm-hmm. With public, it's open-ended, right? You don't know if you're going to rock up at a public charging station and know if it's going to be available or not. Mm-hmm. And that's probably some of the challenges that the public stations will face in South Africa in the coming years. As the numbers grow, you'll start seeing congestion. You'll probably see definitely some market dynamics where people compete and people offer charging maybe outside their home or something interesting like that. I see those business models developing. Mm-hmm. But for trucks, it will definitely just be for the private industry.
And I imagine that given the size of the batteries in these vehicles, that you really need to use DC rather than AC power?
100%. So when you're looking at the larger trucks, DC power is an imperative. Again, depending on the schedules, drivers also need downtime. We've seen that, for example, battery asset values also last longer if you charge them a bit slower. So you don't always want to go for the highest power in every instance. But again, a lower power DC station is really important. Also, the trucks are only compatible with DC in most cases. Okay. So they don't have AC charge points on the trucks.
Okay.
As you go into the smaller segment, maybe you know the 4-tonners, but actually more the 2-tonners and the panel vans, then AC becomes quite useful. Again, because your infrastructure cost is quite a big difference. So looking at the difference between an AC and a DC station is usually a 10x cost difference. Again, if you have a high power station, you can have a higher throughput, and also you can do more vehicles at the same time. So there is a bit of a blended approach you can do, but with the trucks, DC all the way.
I imagine that these vehicles are typically being charged overnight. And you mentioned some of many of them, half of them, are going into sites that have solar power installed. Of course, the sun doesn't shine at night when you want to be charging these vehicles. How are companies dealing with that issue and minimizing their use of the grid? And obviously, carbon emissions is a big one for organizations reporting on this sort of thing. So when these vehicles are charging, it's probably not the optimal time for tapping into the solar. Are you finding companies are also putting in batteries to charge these vehicles overnight?
Yeah, I mean, just looked at a number of data points recently on charging behavior for a fleet. And yeah, you're absolutely right. You have an interesting charge profile that is shifted towards the late afternoon and the evenings. You do see a lot of top-ups for loading and unloading during the day. So that's also quite an interesting opportunity for charging. So it does sometimes happen quite often over, you know, lunchtime, which is peak solar, and that's perfect for them. In lots of cases, we work with the fleets to actually start planning out something like solar products. So we have some solar partners that work with us where we actually help them integrate solar and battery banks into their systems. We're busy with a number of projects on that side now. In lots of cases, you know, some of the larger corporates that we've worked with have really already overinvested in battery storage as well, because they're catering almost for the future of their energy use. So they're thinking, okay, I can't necessarily resell my energy. I want to store as much of it and then use it, you know, where it will be needed. So we've seen in lots of cases they have made that investment. And luckily, solar and battery power, if you structure it in a way where you do, you know, PPAs and leases, are becoming very cost competitive with Eskom. So in lots of cases, it makes even more sense just to add more battery bank storage, capitalize on the energy that you're creating yourself already during the day, than paying Eskom and necessarily also being tied to their fee increases, which is astronomical in the next couple of years.
Presumably, though, as the market is deregulated and liberalized, we're going to see different pricing tiers depending on the time of the day. For example, it might make sense for Eskom, which generates most of its electricity through coal-fired power stations, where you're not seeing much demand, say, between midnight and 5 a.m., for them to cut the price at that time, like the cell phone operators do. Calls after midnight are a lot cheaper, or they offer double promotions for the small hours of the morning when most people are sleeping. And I presume it would make sense to kind of spread out the load over the day and to offer cheaper tariffs in the middle of the night when EVs could be charged, for example, in a fleet.
Definitely. I mean, this is like something that I'm so passionate about, because I think this energy equation is just really interesting when you bring electric vehicles into the mix, right? So we've recently been awarded a grant R&D project where we're going to be working on what's called vehicle-to-grid technology. So actually taking the power from the vehicle batteries, pushing them back to the location in the grid. And you're absolutely right. When you look at the market dynamics of something like time-of-use tariffs, you really see this opportunity to lower costs even more, right? And again, I think like even with Eskom's recent improvements, I think we shouldn't neglect or throw away the grid as part of the equation. It's an important part of the backup. And also, as you said, like you have the opportunity to charge at lower tariff time. So typically what we'll do is we'll then make sure that we schedule a charging accordingly. And again, depending on the fleet's needs, you know, some fleets have the opportunity where the vehicles are only busy during the day. They have the night. That makes a lot of sense, driving down costs. But in lots of cases, that asset needs to run, so they need to get charged up quickly.
Okay. Do you see yourself getting into the public charging infrastructure market at some point, or is it are you happy to focus on private?
Interestingly enough, because we started there, I still have quite a soft spot or a sweet spot for it, because it's just also a very interesting business model. And again, it's not a significant change in the way that we set up our technology and our infrastructure. I mean, it's quite similar.
So you could do it. We could too much tooling.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we could quite easily shift in that space. I do think, however, in South Africa, we've got some wonderful public infrastructure providers. I mean, Rubicon and Gridcars have already put down, you know, a significant amount of public charging infrastructure, and now the market has to grow, right, for that to be successful. I do think, however, a space that we have started working in now is private home charging. So if you have if you're a consumer, we've just found that it's from the feedback from early users is that they've just really struggled to get a charger at home, which sounds so simple. Like it's something that you should just be able to buy online. So we're just busy with a launch now in early Feb for an online store where a user can just quite easily go and buy a charger, book the installation. Our team will take care of everything, and you'll also get access to the roaming partners on the public networks.
It's not something you can install yourself.
No. Unfortunately, you do need an electrician. Yeah, you do need a qualified electrician to do that. And then, I think that's for me is a bit more of an interesting space at this stage. I do think, however, if there are opportunities with some of our partners or some of our OEMs where they're looking to expand into the public public space. For example, if they have opportunities to offer public charging or maybe even semi-public charging at offices, office parks, at truck stops, etc., we'd definitely be willing to look at that. But that's not our focus for now.
Yeah. You've spoken about the Baker's deployment, and that's in the logistics industry. Which other industries are you seeing demand in?
Yeah, I mean, recycling and waste management, that's a very interesting one as well, typically also because they're very much focused on sustainability. So there's a very nice incentive alignment there for ensuring that their fleets are also going carbon neutral. We're seeing lots of interesting conversations happening in the people transport space, so for private transportation services. Again, I think people are usually begrudgingly having to manage vehicles on their fleet for employees, not because they don't want to offer the service, but because managing vehicles is if you're not a logistics provider is a bit of a schlep. So they're definitely looking at moving to electric to bring down costs. We're seeing in the private space also for companies and corporates offering charging to employees as an incentive. I think there's been a bit of a shift of getting people back to work, getting them to actually come into the office. That's kind of changed in the past year or two, which is good for us. And they definitely see this as an opportunity to also help reduce their carbon impact and offer their employees a significant benefit on reducing their transport costs.
We've seen in Kenya there's been a big uptake in e-bikes, electric motorbikes. And that's being driven in the ride-hailing space as well, also in the delivery market. In South Africa, where we see Checkers 60-60 and all these delivery motorbikes on the road all the time, becoming a bit of a menace, if you ask me. But they're all on petrol-powered motorcycles. Do you think the ride-hailing and the last-mile delivery market, specifically around motorbikes, is going to switch electric at some point?
It for a large part, it's probably the most mature market in South Africa at this stage. I mean, you've got wonderful companies. You've got Nova Machina. You've got Green Riders, Mellow Vans. You've got Volternative, all with different forms of business models. But the two-wheeler and three-wheeler space has been really hot in South Africa. And I think that they've seen also quite a significant cost saving also for the drivers on that side. It's a different business model again because it's more independent drivers than large corporations. But they've been making good progress. I think also because South Africa has a different two-wheeler experience typically than in East Africa, where we don't necessarily use it for transport, for personal transport as much. It is very much goods driven. It's Takealot, it's Mr. D, it's Checkers, etc. So I definitely see that, again, I think that's probably the most advanced in terms of conversion currently in South Africa. I see that just continuing to grow. I think there's so many options for bikes. There's just a really good incentive for drivers. So yeah, keep your eye on those companies. They're doing a great job.
Lastly, EV adoption in South Africa has been relatively slow, and there are a number of factors, reasons for this. I think especially affordability and the high taxes that EVs attract in South Africa. They're actually taxed higher than ICE vehicles. How far are we from an inflection point in e-mobility in South Africa? I mean, I've spoken to a lot of guys in the industry, and they will say that this could be the year. 2025 could be the start of the J-curve where EV sales really take off. Do you think we're at that point now, or do you think it's still going to take a bit longer?
Yeah, I think 2027 is a good year for that J-curve pickup. I think a lot of consumers are only now starting to get exposure to different vehicles and vehicle brands. I mean, BYD recently launched Volvo, who we've been working with, have done an amazing job last year. I mean, the EX30 was the best-selling passenger vehicle. You're seeing, Chinese companies also launching in South Africa. So again, I think for the consumer market and also for the business market, having the availability of models is really important. So we're starting to see that. That has been a big hurdle. I think Eskom, definitely the load shedding crisis, that was definitely a big hurdle as well. I mean, obviously, if there isn't power, people don't even want to look at EV. So I must say there is some relief now. And also with the switch to solar, people are feeling relieved by that. Just a note on the tax. I think this is a bit of a common misconception, but EVs aren't taxed higher in South Africa than ICE vehicles.
They're not?
The difference is actually on our free trade agreements. So if you look, for example, with our free trade agreement with Europe, we only pay, we only tariff at 18% versus America at 25%. That's just a tax agreement. That's not necessarily on the vehicles themselves. So all vehicles are actually taxed in the same manner. But I've seen that come up a couple of times, and people think they're more expensive.
Wow. Okay. It's been repeated so many times. It's just taken as gospel.
Yeah. Go take a look. It's just the free trade agreements that we have with different countries and regions, which is typical for a country to negotiate. Okay. So that's the difference. So it's not necessarily on the EVs that are being penalized. On that side, on the tax incentives, though, we have recently seen a tax announcement from government for money manufacturing companies to get about, I think, about 150% rebate on investing in EVs in South Africa. That's fantastic because, again, manufacturing them locally will really drive the market. The next thing we're hoping for is for companies and consumers to also get an incentive similar to the solar schemes, so where you could get X amount off from going to an EV just to help offset the cost, because they are more expensive than the ICE comparator vehicles. And that will just be amazing for the market, I think.
Yeah, and the president has hinted that that's coming.
Let's see. Let's fingers crossed.
Yeah. We'll wait on the Ministry of Trade and Industry and Competition for news on that, hopefully.
Definitely.
Hopefully in the coming months. Michael Maas is CEO of Zimmy Charge. Thank you so much for speaking to Tech Central today.
It was lovely. Thanks, Duncan.
Thank you.